Good morning. Today is Friday, the 31st of December. Joining us this morning out of the Wild and Woolly 5th District, it's our Wild and Woolly guy, Steve Madrone. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, Woolly and Wild is right. Good morning to you and all your listeners. It is a wild time, and I hope everybody's getting dug out, cleaned up, and safe and helping each other out.
Yeah, tis the season, as they say.
It is.
Are you ready for your question?
Sure.
All right. Why do we say handwriting on the wall?
Well, I know that's what the kids love to do when they're little.
Yeah. That's called graffiti.
Oh, okay. Well, enlighten us.
All right. Ancient Babylon flourished under the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar, but his son and successor, Belshazzar, proved weak and ignoring all standards, he once drank heavily from holy vessels seized from the temple in Jerusalem. A mysterious hand appeared after this act of sacrilege, and to the astonishment of the king, wrote four strange words on the wall of the banquet room. Only the Hebrew prophet Daniel could interpret the mysterious message. He boldly told the ruler that they spelled disaster for him and for his nation. Soon after, he was defeated and slain, just as Daniel had said. Religious dramas of the Middle Ages often included vivid interpretations of events in the ancient banquet hall. Viewers of such pageants sat enthralled as they watched the writing of the strange warning to a king. As a result, any threat of impending doom is still known as handwriting on the wall.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Wow, that's a long one.
Came full circle. Full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look around my office here and see what's written on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Be safe. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Who wrote that?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So, 2021. General impression for you about how things developed.
2021. Well, you know, second year of our pandemic, right? Pretty crazy stuff. Certainly a lot for all of us to absorb and deal with. It's created a lot of issues for a lot of businesses, a lot of people, and we're not out of it yet, right? So 2021 has been a really tough year for everybody, I think. Just a real tough time.
As far as the county government, the functionality of it, how people are playing in the sandbox together, interactions, communications within the entity and with other governmental sources that you guys work with. Have things gone surprisingly well, or are they still kind of herky-jerky?
Well, I would say we've got a long way to go. I think, you know, there's a lot of problems. A lot of it's interpersonal. Some of it is old systems that really needed to be upgraded and brought into the 21st century here. You know, so that's ongoing. And, you know, I think for me, for your listeners, they, you know, that are informed and watch board meetings, pay attention to all things going on in the county and things like that, they may have noted that I tend to always take the approach of, I think we all could do better, you know. And for me, when we try to just blame one person for all of our problems, I don't personally believe that's going to fix anything. I think that's just doubling down on blaming somebody. Not that we don't all deserve some sort of blame, shall we call it, or whatever, but it's always been my observation in life that when we all take a look at our own workload, our own area of expertise and responsibility, and we figure out, well, what can I do better? You know, what can I do to make this all work smoother? How can I improve communication? When we do that, when everybody doubles down on their part of it, then we actually start resolving conflict and making improvements on all kinds of things. So I think we still have a long way to go on that. It's really easy and convenient to blame one person and think that that's somehow going to solve all of our problems, and it's just not true.
Now, I'm sure you're not saying to folks that you want to get rid of or dismiss personal accountability.
No, that's what I'm saying is that I want to increase that. I'm saying that I think that if each of us take responsibility for our part, then everything as a whole gets better. Doesn't make it all work perfect right away, but when we think we can just keep doing what we're doing and put all the blame on somebody else, that doesn't solve any problems. Well, Johnny did it. I had nothing to do with it. Johnny did it. I mean, that's you know, like kindergarten and grade school, right? So hopefully we grow up as adults and we figure out that that doesn't work, and instead figuring out what part we play in the conflict, what part we can do to improve and take better personal responsibility for our role, then things start improving.
Are there departments, Steve, that you sense that aren't evolving, that aren't trying to get better, that are still doing it the way that they did 25, 30, 40 years ago?
Yes, I'll just say simply yes. I'm not going to name departments. I want to be very clear that I think that our workers, our staff, do an incredible job. And to be clear, wages have been low, turnover has been high, recruitment's low, and so people are trying to do the job of multiple other people that aren't there. COVID took a very hard hit on the county as well as all government and many businesses, as you know. And so it's clear to me that we're all under stress, and COVID didn't help matters in that regard whatsoever. But I do also recognize that there are many systems that we still use in the county that are pretty old, and, like doing time cards by hand rather than electronically, for instance. And so there are a lot of things I think we could do better. And the sooner we all get on board with our part in that puzzle, the sooner the conflict will be reduced and we'll get back to functioning well. You know, one of the good news here today, let's not make it all bleak just because the weather's been a little bleak, although some people love the snow, right? But the fact is that we've got a long way to go on, improving what we're doing and be more responsive. And one of the things that's going to help us do that, as we have now basically come to final agreement on major packages, wage packages, benefit packages with our unions. And the biggest one, of course, is AFSCME, which is over 2,000 county employees. And we also have the Humboldt County Sheriff's Deputies Association and others. And so we have now finalized those agreements, and that's all coming to fruition with the start of the new year. And it includes major pay raises.
And we'll talk about that as much as we can when we come back.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, before the break, you were talking about a lot of the labor, the negotiating groups have signed off on a new agreement. Typically, when we hear outside of government significant pay increases, that equates to either tax dollars bumping up or decreased services to pay for the direct compensation as well as the retirement plans associated with that. What was the magnitude of these healthy increases that will start to be received starting next week?
Well, the numbers will be out. I believe there's some reports coming out specific, but let me just say it's not a 1 or 2% wage increase. It's very significant over the next 3 years. And so your question was, how is that getting paid for? Well, these things don't get paid for simply just by increasing expenses. You need to tie those to increasing revenues, right? to be able to pay for it if we're not going to decrease services, right, as you said. So,
exactly.
As we sit here today with the crystal ball that we have, because we still don't have all of our final numbers, but we're getting very close to the books getting closed on 1920 and making great progress on 2021, those will give us all the final numbers. But even without all of those, there are several things that we know. We know that sales tax went through the roof, and that was partly because of all the unemployment, the pandemic payments, the stimulus money, and apparently everybody had time on their hands as well as money and went shopping at the hardware stores and did all these home improvement projects or bought a lot of things online, which doesn't help local stores, but with the change in the law a few years ago, we get that sales tax. Even if you're buying from Amazon, somewhere else, we now get that local sales tax based on the origin of the sale. And so what we know, without a doubt, is that sales tax have just increased dramatically. The other one is property taxes. You know, property values are going up. Now, that doesn't help people trying to get into a, you know, first-time home buyer program or anything else, but it has increased our revenues. So those two things went way, way up. Gas taxes went down because nobody was driving for a while, although that's back up. And so across the board, we think what we can see is that we do, in fact, have some significant increased revenues.
Now,
and
my question, I guess, Steve, since we don't have a balance but or don't have closed books for the last 2 years, and the sales tax, you know, there's a lot of speculation that that was a one-time bump and that it isn't continuing into the upcoming year, at least at this point. Is it based on fact, trends, or just kind of intuition, and it kind of seems like we sort of kind of feel that this is the way we're headed?
No, it's based on facts. Yeah, there are a lot of things we don't know. As you said, the books aren't closed. But I've already pointed out things we do know. The other thing we know is that we had a balanced budget, you know, last year, and unless departments have overspent their budgets, we're going to be in good shape with those budgets in order to move into the next couple years to be able to make these payments to our employees.
Weren't those budgets cut back and conservative because of the lack of knowing what the impact of the shutdown was and the virus, and everybody played it very, very close to the vest last year?
Well, there was a point, last year where we were going to require departments to provide us with several budgets, some of them including up to 10 or 15% reductions. That never came to fruition because it was very quickly observed that revenue was going up with sales taxes and property, and so we didn't actually ever initiate those. But the fact that we were paying such low wages, there is a lot of empty positions. So, you know, when you do your budgets, they're based on full positions, every position full. That's the budget I need to have all these positions paid for and run my department for the year.
Even if they're frozen positions?
Well, not for frozen.
Okay,
Positions that are unfilled, that are vacant and empty, which is true across the entire county in every department pretty much, that's money that didn't get spent. So that's savings, you know, that happened because there's a lot of unfilled positions. But do we want those savings? No, because the work's not getting done. It compounds things. People get stressed. They go out on leave. Other compounding problems.
Or so you're paying accelerated on overtime. Yeah.
That's right. One of the other things, a very, very basic business principle, is the fact that when you have really low recruitment because your wages and benefits are too low compared to other positions that you get in the area, then you have not enough staff. And then the rest of them that are there get burned out and they want to leave. So you don't have retention. So what you could say for a fact is that it's costing the county a fortune to not have proper wages in failed recruitment, failed retention, low morale. And those things all cost money as well. As an employer, I know you know this, that you know, people aren't, you know, liking their jobs. They don't feel appreciated. The work doesn't get done as well, right? So, you know, by doing that, by increasing wages, benefits, and doing the right thing there, even though that's costing us money, it actually will potentially save us in terms of the cost of failed recruitment and retention.
Right. The fear I think a lot of folks have is that then when the economy stalls or gets flat, not that Humboldt, I think Humboldt County is going to be the exception for the next 20 years because of some of the cool things that happened this year, but you're locked in. You can't go backwards, and that, rather than the bonuses or the one-time payouts, you're just raising your cost of doing business across the board, and then when you have that 10% dip, you're in trouble.
That's right. How do you end up covering that?
Right.
That's absolutely true. That's always, that potential exists no matter what time and place you look at. That's always the possibility.
Certainly.
And so really what it comes down to is how we operate in the county as a whole. Are we doing things to bring in even more revenues with the economic development work we're doing, with other projects we're getting approved and moving forward? The airport's certainly booming now, and there's a lot of other things going on that could lend themselves to lots of other increased revenues across the county.
Yeah, certainly.
Kendallville's got some exciting things.
Well, this thing called Humboldt State seems to be kicking butt, too. KINS,
there
News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Steve, the concept with a fish farm or aqua farm out on the North Spit, I would think in conjunction with Humboldt State and a lot of the environmental segments of the population that are out there that are in favor of fish and fishing and growing and doing it better, I would think that would be something that's really going to gain a lot of groundswell and support. Are you sensing that also?
Yeah, I have to say that I applaud the developers of that project in the way that they have gone about identifying the impacts and going the extra mile to try and reduce, minimize, and avoid those impacts. They were going to proceed with just a negative deck for an environmental compliance document, and they backed up and said, no, we want to do a full-blown EIR. How often have you heard that? Here in Humboldt, right? So they have taken the initiative on many, many levels to try and go the extra mile to do the right thing. Are there problems with the project? Sure. Are they working on solving those problems? Absolutely. I'm very pleased to see the work they're doing on trying to resolve the intake issues, the outfall issues, the water supply issues. And, just from water supply alone, we've got 65 million extra gallons a day in the Mad River that we're going to lose to some other community if we're not making use of it here, because it's state's water, not ours.
Right.
And so that alone, they're proposing to use about a third of that, maybe 20-some million gallons. So that has a very positive potential there. And I certainly hope that they can continue to work on minimizing the impacts of any of the other parts of the overall operation by try very hard to keep an open mind all the way up until the point that it may or may not be coming before the board, which it won't unless it's denied and appealed or approved and appealed. We only get the appeals. The Planning Commission deals with the rest of it. But there are things that will probably end up coming before the board at some point. So keeping an open mind and hopeful.
Would come in front of the board just because not anything comes through at 100% clearance, or significant thumbs up, thumbs down, Caesar in the Coliseum kind of a vote?
Well, appeals automatically come to the board if something happens, whatever the decision is at the Planning Commission. If somebody appeals it, that comes to the Board of Supervisors, and we act in what's called a de novo situation where it's a brand new project, and we can condition it or do what we think is appropriate with it when it comes before us. But there may be other things, and I haven't delved into it in great detail yet. I've certainly been paying attention and going to the meetings, workshops, and things where I can. But sometimes, you know, you have to rezone things. Sometimes you have to change a general plan amendment or other kinds of things that do have to come before our board. So, again, I don't know the micro detail on that.
That's normal stuff. I guess the concern that I've got is, you know, we have had over the decades such a tremendous record of trying to stall projects out so it drives the cost for the developers up through the roof to the point where it's a tipping point and they walk away with disgust and frustration rather than working through and saying, okay, if I win 7 out of the 10 issues that I get excited about, that's not a bad average in the community wins, rather than going for 100% and some of these draconian measures that are so very frustrating, I guess is the nicest way to say it.
They are, and you know, that's that balancing act between the return on investment for the developer and the return on investment for the community, right? And trying to find that sweet spot where the project works well enough for the community, short-term and long-term, to where they can accept the project, right? And that's where that rub comes in, as you said. Like TerraGen, let's just put it out there, you know, they actually were very close to getting their permits, and there was probably three other
one
things
vote.
They could have done. One vote away from
there were one vote, yep.
In the end. Virginia shifted her vote at the end. And she said, well, it seems like everybody else is going to vote for it. I guess I'll go that way, too. But so it was really 4-1. But at any rate, if they had done three other things, they probably would have gotten their permits. One of them was agreeing to hire local contractors, be they union or not. And they ultimately agreed to do that, but only after they were denied their permits from the Planning Commission. So, right, they were holding that card, waiting to see, do we have to really spend this money on hiring
local? Sure. I mean, you don't put everything down on the table as your opening negotiating ploy.
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, from the very, very start of the project, they kept saying, we're creating all these local jobs, right? So you can't have it both ways. You can't say that and then not do it. So that was one thing. And they came around at the end, but it was kind of too little too late. The other one was maybe transfer the land after the 30 years and the wind machines go away to the Wyatt tribe and to make sure that the Russ family is made whole in terms of that transfer of property, et cetera. But TerraGen and the Russ family couldn't agree to that, so that one wasn't put on the table. And then the third one was they were going to leave these massive concrete pads, 10-foot thick, quarter of an acre, all over the top of the ridge line up there forever. They were only going to take the top foot of the concrete away and leave everything else there. So in a way, they weren't really going to fully mitigate the impact of what they were doing up in a pretty remote region that has a lot of sacred significance for local tribes and stuff. So anyway, I'm just trying to say that it's that balance between return on investment for the developer and the community. And, you know, TerraGen in the meeting offered $1 million, kind of like a bribe almost, like, to see if they could get the Wyatts to come along. And I think it was Cheryl Seidner said, no, we don't sell Mother Nature, that we just don't do that, you know. So it was an interesting thing, and TerraGen really wanted it so badly that they were willing to maybe add a little bit more benefit to the community in the end. But I kind of wish people would do that up front. And I know, like you said, you hold your cards back, et cetera. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of talk about, are we open for business or not in Humboldt
County?
And my comment is, we're open for responsible business. That's it. Just one extra word in there.
Well, I have a sense, and I, you know, maybe this is being a little jaundiced from growing up here and all the other stuff, is that there's 10% that don't want anything ever to happen here.
Yep, you're absolutely
the
right.
Never,
it's always going
to
be
never
that.
Anything
yeah.
crowd. And yeah. they tend yep. to be the vocal ones. They tend to be the ones that have the time to go to the public meetings and. And I think there's a bubbling frustration from the majority that are saying, you know, why not us? Let us participate in this. So I think that some of that stuff might have turned the corner this year. At least that's what my hope is.
I believe so. I hope so as well. I think even though you and I don't agree on a lot of political things, I think we both are responsible, reasonable fellas. They can see where the appropriate compromises can be made on things.
Yeah, we don't have to agree to get the job done. And
I have to say that the other 90% are learning how to be involved better because of that 10, right? I mean, and Zoom, Zoom has increased participation. There is no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't even get our meetings done anymore because there's so much public comment. But
yeah. Well,
it's important to get that comment, but you have to manage it, right?
Well, that's called leadership, right? KINS,
right.
News and Information Time, it's 8:47.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with four airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on AHA, American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Reno, and Las Vegas. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, when you look back on 21, is this going to be a watershed year for Humboldt? Is this going to be a normal year for Humboldt? You know, in 50 years, what will this year be referenced as?
2021, what would it be referenced as?
Yeah, what are they going to think about it? I mean, we didn't have a major flood, so we don't have that.
Right.
Didn't have a major earthquake.
We had fires.
Yeah.
We had fires. Yeah. We had a big earthquake.
Yeah, but not a ton of damage.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Southern Humboldt got rocked.
Sure.
But, yeah, some of those types of things that we often will use as reference points didn't happen this year. So how are we going to remember this year?
Well, I think exactly as you stated it, a watershed year. You know, that term is often used to describe years where there's big floods or big fires or big changes. Well, the big change was the pandemic, right, and just dealing with that. And when we all thought, maybe we'll just slow the spread and 3 to 6 months later we'll be all good, right? And here we are, you know, heading to the second, you know, the end of the second year of this almost. And it's rocked us to the core, you know, families, communities, neighborhoods, government, everything, businesses. So I think we're going to remember it for that. But what I have to say is that what I believe 2021 has done is set the stage for some really dramatic and fantastic watershed things to occur in 2022, like the Klamath Dams now coming down. You know, that is now pretty much, you know, 99.9% probable within a year or two that that's going to start happening, and that can have major positive impacts for our fisheries. And it actually does nothing to delete the water withdrawals for irrigation and agriculture in the Upper Klamath Basin, because those upper dams are still staying for now. The lower ones, they just create power. They don't divert water for agriculture in any way, shape, or form. So that's huge. I mean, how many years has that been getting worked on, right? We're close to being able to move forward over the next few years on getting our 50,000 acre feet on the Trinity River. The county got a $500,000 grant to put together all the detailed work it's going to need to do in order to be able to call for that water, working with the Hoopa and the Yurok tribe to be able to benefit the fisheries.
Now, is that in addition to the minimum water flow that was promised?
Yes.
10, 12 years ago?
That's correct. So put it really simple because we don't have much time. Proviso 1 and Proviso 2. And Proviso 1 requires certain flows to maintain the fishery. Proviso 2, which is what the 50,000 acre feet comes from, can be used to enhance those fisheries beyond just subsistence, right?
Oh, okay.
Something better. So no, they tie together and they both benefit. They don't cancel each other out. Another one is Redwood Creek. We're on the verge of getting significant funding, working with the ranchers there in Lower Redwood Creek and the community and all the agencies to do some really amazing things in Lower Redwood Creek, where we might pull back the levees a little bit and do some restoring of the estuary functions.
I was wondering if we were going to get the levees built so that they're safe instead of a rebuilt.
Well, that
because they certainly
the
have been fatigued
one.
Out. Yeah,
they have been, and we are hoping to start a government investigation in this coming year or so. To look more deeply into all of that. You got the Eel River. Go ahead.
I was wondering, just with Oryk, if there's any indication that at the end of that they're going to be able to get a water system in place so that Oryk can participate in the growth that Humboldt County is going to be experiencing with housing
Absolutely.
And everything else.
Well, Yeah, absolutely. You know, the hardworking members of the Oryx Community Service District have been doing amazing work there with several consultants. They're starting to tap into some of the funding sources out there for drought emergency and other things to improve their storage. They've actually got excellent groundwater there in the Redwood Creek Valley around Oryx. They've got a surplus of water on right. some levels. And they've got a sewage system that they're trying to get done because the septic systems
that's the challenge.
That high yeah. groundwater. Yeah. yeah. And so I actually think there's going to be some really significant progress with those. Oryx is going to see a real renaissance, I believe, over the next 10 to 20 years.
That would be so dandy. And I guess that's something we can look forward to in the upcoming year. Thanks for coming by.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Have a happy new year.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, okay.
For a better one.
Yeah, and make it through till January, and we'll talk again. Okay, fine.
Sounds good. All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.